I plan on saying you believe the leaking of classified information is a serious matter and that it should be looked into and pursued to the fullest possible extent, I said to the president, and that the Department of Justice is the appropriate agency to look into it. And I don't plan on going too far beyond that. Yeah, I think that's right, the president replied. I do believe it's a serious matter, and I hope they find who did it. And Andy, I am still good to say that nothing has been brought to our attention to suggest White House involvement beyond what we have read in the papers, right? I asked. I do not know of anything, Andy responded. And last I heard from Al, he did not either, he added, referring to Al Gonzalez, the White House counsel and a longtime Bush loyalist from Texas. We were all on the same page. The president offered some words of encouragement as I headed out the door. I knew it was likely to be a contentious gaggle in briefing. This was the first major scandal to hit the Bush White House, and the press corps was ready to pounce. The president was up for re-election next year, and Democrats saw an opportunity to put us on the defensive and potentially deal a serious blow to the president's chances at re-election. I was at the center of the brewing storm, the first line of defense for the White House. Just over 2 months into the job as White House press secretary, I was about to go through my first real test in the briefing room. There would be plenty of the inherent tension between press and press secretary at play today. Half the time during the daily White House briefing, the press corps is trying to get under the press secretary's skin or catch him in a mistake or contradiction, a gotcha moment. It is a rite of passage for any press secretary. One way reporters try to crack through the wall when only carefully selected information is being provided publicly. I had a pretty good idea of what I was walking into, which gave me an opportunity to prepare. Many of my colleagues at the White House would be watching the briefing closely today, in part to see how I handled myself under pressure. There were some 85 questions during the informal off-camera morning gaggle with reporters, 70 of them about the reported leak investigation. Reporters talked over one another as they fired away with their questions, and that was fine by me. I wanted to make sure I had a good feel for the specific questions the press would be asking, including at the daily briefing later in the day. I intentionally let the gaggle run a little longer than the normal 15 minutes. It confirmed what I already knew. There was going to be a feeding frenzy at the briefing, focused almost exclusively on the investigation into the leak of Valerie Plame's identity. Since Novak had quoted two senior administration officials in his article, and the Washington Post had cited two White House officials as spreading information about Plame's identity, the media assumed that White House officials must have been responsible for the leak. Rove, the lightning rod for White House critics who viewed him as the president's Machiavellian mastermind, was the usual suspect of speculation in the Washington rumor mill. His name was invoked repeatedly by reporters during the day's gaggle and briefing. Each time, I dispelled any notion he was involved. By tradition, the daily press briefing ends when the senior wire correspondent on the front row, whichever of the two present from the Associated Press and Reuters has covered the White House longer, says thank you. So the duration of the briefing can range from a minimum of 20 minutes to an average 30 or 35 minutes to a maximum of 45 to 55 minutes. Today would be at the high end of the range. On most days, the official White House briefing transcript, which is made public each afternoon, lists about 10 or so different topics. Today, it would list just two: the leak investigation and Iraq. Neither the press nor I took the briefing room contentiousness personally. We were just doing our jobs. Mine was to help the president advance his agenda and to faithfully and accurately articulate his views and policies in the way that he preferred. Theirs was to report the news about the president and his administration, hold us accountable for his decisions and policies, and question his governance and that of his staff and advisors. Journalists who cover the White House tend to be some of the best in their profession. So there we were that Monday afternoon, a little past noon, less than 3 months into my tenure as press secretary, ready to engage in verbal combat. There was a high press turnout in the briefing room. Some stills, photographers, were ready to click the one or two pictures that could fit with the front page stories to be printed in the nation's newspapers the following day. If the press got the better of me, the picture would likely be unflattering. The cutaway cameras were set. Four or five people, each shoulder harnessing or tripoding their respective network's cameras, 3 or 4 feet at most to my left, with one always rotating in and out about 2 feet behind my left shoulder. The cable networks were preparing to go live to cover one of the top news items of the day, a White House under investigation for the reported leak of classified information about a covert official, a potential felony offense if done intentionally and knowingly. I felt well prepared. The pre-briefing prep session, a mini murder board, a simulated, though very informal briefing with my deputy and assistant press secretaries that gave me a chance to practice answering questions and fine-tune my responses, had been helpful. Card and Gonzalez had already assured me they knew of no White House involvement in the disclosure of Plame's identity. Since the subject had come up in the morning gaggle, I'd visited with the president before the briefing to make sure he was fine with my saying in response to questions that he would fire anyone involved in the leaking of classified information, specifically the identity of Valerie Plame. I told him I intended to say that anyone involved in this would no longer be in the administration. The president had agreed, saying firmly, I would fire anybody involved. I had his full, unequivocal approval. He also asked whether I had urged reporters to come forward if they knew who the leakers were. I said I would make that point. He said, good, I think you should. I could feel the adrenaline flowing as I gave the go-ahead for Josh Deckard, one of my hard-working, underpaid press office staff assistants, to give the 2-minute warning so the networks could prepare to switch to live coverage the moment I stepped into the briefing room. When visitors see the White House briefing room, they usually say, it looks a lot bigger on TV. It was a cramped, dingy space, particularly on days when most of the 48 assigned seats are occupied and other reporters are standing in the narrow aisles. Throw in the glare of the Klieg lights, numerous microphones hanging from the ceiling, some still photographers and network camera crews so close they could almost knock the podium over, and you get quite a set. I pushed back aggressively on assumptions embedded in the questions and challenged reporters to produce information suggesting that White House aides were responsible for the leak. I reiterated that the president expected everyone in his administration to adhere to the highest standards of conduct and that no one would have been authorized to leak the identity of Wilson's wife. Terry Moran, the chief White House correspondent for ABC News, tried to pin me down on the assertion I'd made in the morning gaggle that the president knew Karl Rove was not involved in the leak. It had been fresh in my mind from the meeting with the president, and I'd unintentionally let it slip in response to questioning about why the president was neither directing the White House to get to the bottom of the controversy nor interested in knowing whether or not his senior advisor was involved. It immediately prompted questions about how the president knew. The follow-up had been easier to brush off in the gaggle. In the on-camera briefing, I danced around the question a little before repeating a line I used at times. We are not in the habit of discussing conversations the president has with his senior advisors. In response to a question from Dana Bash of CNN about why the president was not looking at this as an ethical matter, since he'd committed himself as a candidate to restoring honor and integrity to the White House, I replied, the president has set high standards, the highest of standards for people in his administration. He's made it very clear to people in his administration that he expects them to adhere to the highest standards of conduct. If anyone in this administration were involved in it, they would no longer be in this administration. Those last words would get plenty of media play over the next few years, particularly as important information came to light. With the president's approval and his oft-stated commitment to honor and integrity embedded in my mind, I could not have been more confident in what I said. When he announced that he was running for president in June 1999, Bush had said, "We will show that politics, after a time of tarnished ideals, can be higher and better. We will give our country a fresh start after a season of cynicism." On January 22, 2001, our first full day in office, the president had reminded all of us in his administration at the public swearing-in ceremony for senior White House staff to adhere to the high standards that come with high office and avoid even the appearance of problems. His commitment to high ethical standards had made many of us who served proud to answer the call to be a part of his team. We believed this president was uncompromisingly committed to something better than what Americans had seen from some elected leaders. And he had established his reputation in part on saying what he meant and doing what he said. Now, 2.5 years later, the question of whether the administration still adhered to those high standards was on everybody's mind. 45 minutes after it began, the briefing was over. It was time for me to come down from the adrenaline rush of a contentious session and enjoy the moment. The feedback in the post-briefing critique with my deputies and assistants was very positive. The official White House transcript was 32 pages long. The first 24 were about the leak investigation. More than 110 questions and 33 and a half minutes elapsed before we turned to the topics other than the leak investigation. I received many accolades that afternoon for the way I conducted the briefing under fire. Praise came from colleagues in the White House and the administration, and even a number of White House reporters. Bill Plant, a cynical veteran CBS News White House correspondent, even said to me, "I've seen a lot of press secretaries in tough spots. That was not easy today. I just wanted to say, you did a good job." When I saw the president later in the day, he similarly said, "Good job today." I expressed appreciation, not knowing whether he had actually caught any of the briefing or was simply told by my colleagues on the senior staff that I'd held my own. I don't know whether this was my finest performance in the briefing room, but I felt pretty good about it, and even better after receiving kind words throughout the day. At least I'd shown that I was ready to do my part to help navigate the Bush White House through the troubled waters to re-election. For the second night in a row, the network newscast all headlined their broadcast with the leaked story, as did the morning shows and newspapers the following day. It wouldn't be the last time. Like the war at the root of the scandal, it was not going away anytime soon.